Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am your host, Susan, Laris, and Danz. And on this beautiful day from the Pacific Northwest, I'm talking to you from Portland, Oregon, fresh from coming from the beach yesterday, which was absolutely gorgeous. I am so delighted today to be welcoming back to the show Dr. Robert Forman. Robert is quite a way shower. And to intro him is not even to do this justice. I can't even give a standard introduction to Dr. Robert Forman because he has so many things that he has done in his life spiritually that he is going to have a lot to share with us today, I know. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Forman. He is the award-winning author of Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, which is a very honest, authentic sharing of his soul. It's the only way I can put it, and quite a remarkable journey he has had. Robert is also a professor of comparative religions, and he's been doing this for 20 years. He has a PhD from Columbia University, focused on mystical experience, and professorships at City University of New York and Vassar College. But when Robert speaks, it is not just through the lens of his academic experience. It is through the rich authenticity of his own personal experience. And that comes through not only in his book, but also when he speaks with us. And that's why I have been looking so forward to bringing him back to the show. And something I shared with Robert before the show today is I'm only beginning to learn all the different ways that he has been involved in really what I would call spiritual leadership circles within this world. And it's really quite remarkable, and yet he comes to us simply as himself, the authentic person to share from the heart, which is also remarkable, and that's where we all need to be. Now, if you want to take a look at Robert's website while we're talking, there is a link on the show page. It's enlightenmentaint.com. And there is also a chat room open for the show today, and you can go in there and enter your questions, comments, if you'd like to just talk about the show while it's ongoing. And I do want to say something about Robert's book. I think this is worth quoting, someone who spoke very highly of this book. So let me, before I bring him on, just read this. This is from Jack Canfield, of course, co-creator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. This book is more than a memoir of a profoundly revealing spiritual journey. It is a deep invitation to be your authentic self, to fully own, embody, and express every aspect of yourself, the honesty, openness, and transparency of Robert's spiritual journey instantly captivated me. I read the book in one long, joyous sitting. I literally could not put the book down. It is illuminating, entertaining, and impactful. If you're looking for guidance as to what is truly spiritual and enlightening, then read this book. It is definitely chicken soup for the spiritual seeker's soul. So that's from Jack Canfield about Robert Foreman's book, Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be. And so without further delay, I'm going to welcome Robert back on the show. Hello, Robert. Welcome back.
Well, Susan, I can't tell you thank you enough for that sweet and very heartfelt introduction. I am just moved and honored to be here. I understand your show is becoming more popular, and so I'm especially honored to be here.
Well, you know, I will tell you that the listenership is going up, and I was chatting. I'll tell you a little story. I used to go to football games a lot. I grew up in Denver, and in Denver, football is very popular. And we were Broncos fans, and so I would go to the stadium and sit in the stadium, and I'm starting to look at my show that way. I was talking to my brother, who's also a football fan, and I was saying, how many people do you think those stands seat are those, you know, because it boggles the mind. I mean, we're getting well into the thousands, okay, and I can only see it in a stadium, and yet the way to see it, and I can see it this way, which is so important, is it's just one person at a time. When I listen to a show, it's just me listening to a show. And so I'm beginning to figure this out. When you talk to a lot of people, you're not talking to a lot of people. You're talking to one person at a time. And that's the same with the guests. You know, I was admitting to you earlier that the last time we did a show was kind of right after I came in from out of town, and I think you had an appearance schedule or something, so we got you on really quick, and I didn't have a chance to read your entire book, and we talked honestly about that on the show. I didn't fake it. I didn't pretend to have read your book. I made it very clear I hadn't had a chance to read your whole book, but now that I have read it, I mean, all I can say is wow, on multiple levels, because not only is it just so authentic, I mean, the way that you express who you truly are is remarkable, but what really comes through, too, is what a journey and the people that you have had the opportunity to interact with, major spiritual leaders, and, you know, also being this professor specializing in mystical experience. And so I had to go through my own journey to this show and say, okay, now I really know everything about, well, not everything, but a lot about this man. And yet I still am determined to interact with you simply as the person, not the lofty Dr. Foreman. even though I admire what you've done, but that's the whole point. That's the point of your book, is to come to the table, just like a hymn I learned in my youth, just as I am. That was going through my head this morning. I was thinking about that. That's where we come to talk, just as we are. And so here we are, Robert. And since we have a new audience here and a growing audience, what I'd like you to do is if you could speak just a little bit about what led to your book and tell us, intro us to your journey and take us into this book of yours and your life.
Oh, goodness, that's a lot. But before we do that, let me say this. As I was listening to the introduction, I think that what I like to do or how I like to see myself is that my life has been shaped by the experiences that happened to me starting when I was about 24 and have continued ever since. And in a certain sense, I kind of stand, or I stand like many people, as a kind of a marker of the infinite. The infinite is what shaped me, what I like to call the vastness, is what shaped me. And so in whatever way I can, I like to be a kind of reminder of that, a kind of stand for that. And so I was really quite moved by your introduction, because in a certain sense you were pointing to that and pointing to this strange journey that I've been on. So let me tell the story, starting really how I got into my path, and then I'll talk a little about the book. I got into my path because when I was a kid, I Well, there was some abuse, and I became very depressed and anxious, and I started trying to figure out what on earth was wrong with me. I did not know at the time there had been some abuse, but what I did know is how unhappy I was, and I think I started where a lot of people start, which is in pain. And so I tried this and that, the other thing. I tried yoga and Zen and psychotherapy, and then I stumbled into transcendental meditation, which really worked for me. I don't think it works for everybody, but it sure as hell worked for me. And within about 2 or 3 years, something happened to me that in a very kind of organic way, a sense of an openness or a sense of true silence kind of established itself in my life, in the back of my head it began, and it's sort of grown ever since. And in a way, that silence has become the kind of fulcrum of my life, where that's really how I have found orientation. And the thing that surprised me, and the reason I wrote the book, is that I had always expected, having read lots of stuff about spirituality, I had always expected that, you know, if you gain a permanent silence, as I did, that everything would be great, that your life would just be transformed and enlightenment would just make everything happy and everything easy. And I struggled with the fact that everything didn't become easy. The silence itself was easy. But my life as a whole, and my relationships and my psyche and my work life, everything, I had to sort of find my way into bringing whatever value I was finding in silence. I had to find my way how to bring that quality, that value, out into the rest of my life. And so that's really what the book has been about. It's about the challenge I think all spiritual people face. So it's one thing to get peak experiences, or in my case, permanent experiences. It's a whole other thing to know how to integrate that with the rest of your life. And that's been my struggle, and I think that's pretty much everybody's struggle. And so I wrote the book for people who are trying to figure out how to live a spiritual life, not just how to have experiences, or even how to have permanent shifts, but how to live the life of spirituality.
You know, I will tell you that I've been known to mention the concept of heaven on earth, or, you know, the quantum leap, or, you know, what is this goal? And your book really does challenge us to really ponder, what is heaven? What is heaven? Is it really this perfection? Would we be bored? I mean, if we really did come from the divine, where one would surmise we had heaven, we had everything in that place before we were born, perhaps we're in this place of perfection. I don't know. I'd be curious to see what you say about that. But when we come here, I think what your book really helps us to confront, in a way, is, what is it that we're really looking for? If life was effortless, if we had no resistance at all, if it was just a breeze, you know, if there was no Mount Everest, if it was just a simple walk all the time, not even walking, what would that life be? Would that be heaven?
Yeah, and I think In a certain way, what established itself in my life was a kind of heaven. And what I found was that it was not making everything effortless. That you know, in dealing with my wife, I've been married for 35 years now. In dealing with my wife, I really have had to work to learn how to do that. In dealing with my work life, in becoming more organized, in becoming more, I don't know, learning how to pull up my socks. I mean, each of these things doesn't come with effortlessness. You have to learn the tools. You have to learn how to do this. But I think the challenge for us is to recognize that enlightenment points to, or silence points to, a kind of effortlessness. And you're pointing to it. And my word for that is wu wei, by the way. It's a Taoist word that means creative non-resistance. So if our whole life is oriented around non-resistance, you know, can you get your psyche so free, so uncomplicated, that there's no resistance in thinking about your own pain? can you get your work life so efficient and so effective that you're not afraid of things going well or poorly, and there really isn't any resistance? Can you get your marriage in such a way that it really is okay that your wife is not meeting your fantasy or your husband is not meeting up to your hopes? It's like that, I think, is the challenge. It's one thing to have heaven, but it's a whole different matter to live it in such a way that everything you do carries that quality of non-resistance. And the answer to the question you're sort of pointing to is, no, it's not boring at all. But there's less Sturm und Drang, there's less craziness, there's less high emotionality. Not that you're not emotional, but there's less melodrama in the whole thing. And you just become able to engage the world with increasing openness. But I also think that even, and I would say this is heaven on earth, that it's not that it's a one state. Rather, I think heaven points to, or in my case, the way I'd put this is the vastness points to the ability to keep growing in such a way and keep learning in such a way that the learning that you're doing is not, you're not resisting the learning that you're doing. You're not struggling with the fact that you are imperfect and still learning and still growing. So it's in that sense, I think, that we can have perfection. The perfection is of learning that growing is really part of the deal.
And see, I think that's a really important point because so many times our goal is, as I said, maybe something that we really don't want, a different kind of perfection, you know, that ultimate everything is okay in a way that is beyond the human experience. I guess I would say when I hear you speak, it seems that what you have learned is embracing the human experience while still having the eyes at times, well, actually it's always there, is of the infinite, that you're conscious of that within you,
yeah.
And yet you're having a human experience, and that's why you're here, and you embrace that as opposed to only wanting to be the infinite, you know, not being Robert. You know, sometimes, see, there's the other part of this, too. So many times we hear the ego is harmful. The ego is harmful. I mean, you've heard it throughout your life, I'm sure, through all the different journeys you've had. And you know, how do we characterize that, Robert? I mean, if we let go of the ego, there's no Robert. There's no Susan. There's nothing that makes us special. And there's almost no point. I've thought about this myself, is that why would the infinite even express itself on this planet as human beings if there was not a point to being human? And I think I would be curious as to how you would reflect upon that.
Oh, it's a wonderful set of questions. I've thought a lot about it. First of all, one of the things that has surprised me is that the carrying silence on a permanent basis is it's almost as if it's beneath what you do in your everyday life. In other words, you know, I go about dealing with stuff. I'm sitting in a park right now, and I watch the trucks go by, and I watch the dogs that play, and you know, it's like those eyes that see the dogs and see the trucks and see the grass are the same eyes. But what's different is that beneath them, what's holding them, what is beholding my seeing, what is beholding my hearing, has become silence. And that silence has expanded over the years to be, you know, quite vast. And so that the question of the ego is interesting because one of the things that surprised me was that the carrying silence didn't make my ego stuff go away. It never has. You know, I still struggle with success, and I struggle with money, and I struggle with this and that. But what happens is that now you're carrying that on something new, or you're holding it within something new. It's almost as if you have, I don't know, one of the analogies I like is that it's almost as if you have a warm tone that's beneath whatever it is that you're hearing or seeing. So that it makes the difficulties of the ego less. It doesn't make them nothing, but it makes them not quite so overwhelming as I think they were when I started all this. So that I think that one of the lessons I've been learning, if there's one or two lessons one of the lessons I've been learning in my life is that it is, their ego questions never go away, but it's possible to become so big that the ego questions don't quite overwhelm you anymore in the way that they did. The phrase I like to use is the messiness of life. That is to say, I think the messiness of life is really what we have to learn about and learn to integrate and learn to welcome. So that it's that messiness, it's stuff that doesn't work, it's stuff that, you know, where things are difficult, that I think the real lessons of the life are. And I'm happy enough to say to you, I'm still learning those lessons, and I like it. I continue to discover how many ways I'm screwed up and how many ways I'm messing up. It's cool that you get to say, oh, there's another one. How interesting is that? You know, I think we're all in that path, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I sort of wandered around to answer your question off here.
No, it was kind of a wandering question. I'm known for asking those pretty loaded questions, but that was a very good answer. You know, I have to say that more and more what's helping me, and I see this kind of wisdom coming in through you, is we're adventurers. I like to think of myself as an adventurer. In fact, sometimes I have this vision in my head of climbing Mount Everest. I've watched programs. In fact, there's a show on. I think it's a series of climbing Mount Everest. And, I think about different parts of climbing Mount Everest, because there really are. There are different phases of climbing Mount Everest. And not everybody necessarily wants to take on Everest. You know, maybe you're climbing a smaller hill, but it's still a journey. It's still an adventure. Or maybe you're doing something else that's adventurous. But that's our life. And so when we encounter something, you know, I like to think of that analogy. Okay, all right, there's the sheer cliff. Now what? You know, it's as if we're climbing it without even knowing the plan, and yet that universe, that omniverse within the silence, the vastness, it knows. It knows the path. But maybe we don't want to cheat. I mean, it's almost like maybe just begin to glimpse enough of it. I don't know. And here's where I'm working on coming to an understanding of this path, is where do we find that balance where we can feel that infinite and we can actually express that infinite, even power in a sense, although I'm not sure that's the right word for it, but potential. It's there, and yet we're still having this adventure as a human being. And what I have to say is I, too, have seen things and have actually gotten into some pretty intense discussions with others about this idea of even when you're in the presence of the infinite and you are in the conscious presence, and I get that to a degree. I mean, I've had my own experiences, which we may talk a little bit about in a bit, but you're still you, and that's the beauty of it. And now there's this love for you as well. That's the other thing that I've felt, is that, you know, Robert, you are special. Susan, you're special. Everybody out there is special. We're all having this human experience, and yet we also have this vastness that is all of us, essentially.
I've got a whole bunch of reflections on what you just said, which was just juicy as hell. First, this word adventure. I think that for some people, the adventure seems to be, can I make a lot of money? For some people, the adventure seems to be, can I have a lot of sex? But I think for the kind of people that tend to listen to a show like this one, the adventure is, and can I become more real? Can I become more whole? Can I become a more spiritual being? And I think that's an adventure that calls to lots and lots of people. And I think that it is a privilege to be on a path of becoming more real, because you get to see where you yourself have been standing in the way. And I think that's part of it. But the other thing I want to comment on is that one of the lessons that you can't help but see when you've been involved in this stuff for a while is, When I was 24, this silence dawned in my life. And I would have said back then, oh, look at this silence dawned in my life. How cool is this? And then when I was 34, I think I had a little more kind of a little more open sense of what it is that's happened to me, a little more sort of complete sense of the spirit. And then when I was 40, I could say, or 44, I could say, oh, now I think I'm starting to understand this stuff. And when I was 54, I could say, you know, I think I'm really getting this now. And then by the time I'm 64, which I am, by the time I'm 64, you could say, you know, I think maybe I'm really getting this now. So that I think that all of us have a sense of what spirit is. All of us have a sense of what it is to carry silence at the core of our souls. And yet that sense grows and grows and grows. And I don't think there's a limit to it. I don't think there's a place that you reach where you say, okay, that's it, I got it. I think what you get is you get this more and more and more. So I want to say to virtually everyone that's listening to this show, yeah, you get it. And that's not to say you get all of it. That's not to say you get it as deeply as you will get it in another 10 years. But I can say, yeah, you get it. This is, and I, you know, it's wonderful to talk to people who have opened their souls up to what is beyond them. I just think that's just so cool. And I want to say, yeah, and keep going. Keep going. Don't stop. And don't stop bringing it into the rest of your life and bringing it into the everyday. I think that's really the challenge that we all face. Yeah?
Yeah. You know, there's a part of your book where you get a confirmation about getting it from a pretty high source, I would say, and I'll let you speak about that if you like. But here's the question associated with that. Why is it, Robert, when deep down we know we get it? I mean, we do. I mean, we know that we're getting it. Actually, for me, it's easier for me to say I'm getting it because it's a journey. It's a journey. And maybe you'll correct me on that, although I don't know if there's any correction in this kind of conversation. But maybe for me, that's just the way I see it. I'm getting it. I'm getting it more and more. And yet I deny it. You know, we think we're imagining it. It.
Yeah.
Especially it. And you know, I will introduce into this that I've had some pretty powerful mystical experiences that came to me unannounced and unexpected. And then my life has been about coming to terms with that more and more. And so I've had to really work with this, and I'm only now, quite honestly, beginning to deal with it honestly and openly because it's and I know there are people out there who've had this, because when you've had a mystical experience, and that's an important part of your experience, that I believe, is it brings you into the it more fully. And sometimes we're not even prepared fully for it, and we have to interpret it. But then there's always this doubt maybe later, like, oh, well, maybe it was this or that. And we come up with all these explanations. And yet deep down, we know this was real. This was the real. And I say the real with a capital R, and yet we're experiencing it through the real with a lowercase r. And yet we seek confirmation. And I saw that in your book. And why don't you talk a little bit about this whole idea? Because you just affirmed the whole audience. You realize that. You just told them that we got it. And that's something that someone did for you once.
For me, the reason I needed that confirmation, it was about, oh, goodness, probably about 30 years after this whole thing dawned. I was this experience of silence came on when I was on a long meditation retreat, and my master at the time was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And I did not talk to him about it because it seemed it couldn't possibly be the enlightenment that I had heard and read so much about. And so I found myself wondering over the course of the next years whether this was, whether this wasn't, what is it, what wasn't it, what was it. And it wasn't that I was doubting that I was having the experience, but what I was doubting was, is it fair to talk about the experience that I've been having for 20, 30 years? Is it fair to think this is actually what I've been hearing about with these terms like moksha or Buddha mind or whatever it is? And so The curiosity I had, or better still, the kind of deep, long question, it's like, is it okay for me to think about this as enlightenment? Was really the question that I had. And so I befriended Ram Dass. I met him on a series of conferences where we were both speaking, and I took him aside one day and I said, is this, you know, really, is this that? I'm tired of wondering. And he was very sweet, and he said, yeah, this is that. And that was all I needed to hear, just one sentence. This is that.
Yeah.
And basically I could stop asking the damn question. That was really what was on my mind. And he helped me enormously by saying that. He helped me just like, okay, you can stop worrying. You can stop wondering. Ah, you're done. You know, and I think people that have the kind of transformations that I had, and there's probably a lot of them listening to the radio here, you know, it's like there's a piece of it that you want to say, just, you know, is this what I think it is? Just let me stop wondering, please. You know, so I think that it does help. It does help a lot. And for, you know, for your experiences, for somebody to say to you, yeah, this is the infinite, that's what we're talking about. You know, it's like that's very, very helpful sometimes, to just helping you stop wondering about this stuff and stop asking the darn question.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, one of the things that happens to people, and in a few weeks, I'm actually going to have another guest on who's going to talk about this whole thing, which is going to be really brutally, openly honest for me, it can become almost, if you break wide open with no guide, see, you were training. I wasn't training when I broke wide open.
In many ways, it's harder. Yeah.
It is. It's like going on a vision quest without being told you're on a vision quest, and you know, having someone who's giving
exactly
you the
right
tools and saying, here's what you need to do and prepare. And so,
and
I'm finding that more and more people this is happening to, and it has labels out there. I mean, some people call it spiritual emergence. You know, some people just simply call it Kundalini awakening. I mean, I've heard that many times, that it can happen so suddenly. And I did trigger it. I mean, I had reached a point where I did ask. I mean, I asked for it. You know, the old thing, ask and you shall receive. I mean, I was obviously ready for something. Yes, I have never made a more heartfelt request to be shown the way. Now, at the time, I figured there was the way. I had come out of evangelical Christianity, which, although your book actually has something interesting to say about how many different, when professors talk about this, I found this so fascinating, some of the things that were in there, just the little hidden gems. Many of us think we have the way. You know, I always thought some groups tend to think that more than others, but I guess, you know, it's pretty common.
Yeah, it's very common. It's much more common than we know. Yeah, I agree.
Even Eastern religions, because I always thought, well, Eastern religions don't think that, you know, but maybe they do. But anyway, I asked. I hear the dog. It's okay. No worries. I know you're outside.
Okay. He'll stop in a minute. There's a dog walking by a dog.
Yeah.
That's what's up there.
No, it's not a problem. But we can hear you. I just wanted to say it's not,
okay,
not a big deal. Yeah, I asked to be shown the way, and I asked it in tears, and I asked it after quite a crisis where I was being torn between belief systems. I had a brief life-threatening crisis that was very brief, really, but it didn't matter how brief. It was enough to really make me confront things I'd been taught about hell, which I'd always doubted my belief system. See, I was a doubter. I was told you had to believe this way. And I always questioned. It didn't feel right. And then the New Age movement came along in the late 70s, and I had people exposing me to some of that. I was quite young. I was just a teenager. But it was important. It meant something to my journey that I was exposed to some of these concepts, and I was questioning. And I couldn't reconcile them, Robert. I couldn't reconcile truth. And they were so... I felt drawn towards certain things in Eastern mysticism, for example, and yet my very powerful upbringing, let's just put it that way, had embedded in me, but that might be evil. And so there was this conflict. And so I stopped being spiritual for a very long time. In fact, I stopped. I don't know that I was spiritual per se back then. I tried. Well, actually, I was doing things. I was doing meditation. I was starting to walk down a certain path, but then I got afraid. Things happen. Like one time I went, I had something where something happened in my spine. In fact, that was really interesting reading about that in your book, where someone said it was with a healer. They released a blockage, and I started going out of body. I mean, I felt myself going, and it terrified me. It was not like your experience where you were welcoming it. I was terrified because I had been taught that such things may be bad. So anyway, to make a long story short, eventually I asked to be shown the way, and essentially much the same thing happened. And I don't know why. I don't know why this happens to certain people. This came up last time in our talk, and it doesn't. I think it happens to people when they're ready. I know it's happening to more and more people, but it changed me forever. And you know, I see so much about you. I see you reflected in your experience is reflected in my life too. I was anxious. I had a lot of angst about life, and after that happened, that was the beginning. It took a while, but I started to find that peace that always eluded me while still being me. That's what's so beautiful about your experience and what I relate to, is that yes, I'm anxious too sometimes, and yet there's this peace. I mean, I was one with the sun. I will never forget that. I was one with the sun. I was one with everything, and yet I was standing in the sun as me. And I know that, you know, some people say, oh, well, that's just crazy. And actually, there were people who thought it was, and I did lose my grounding. That was another hard part, is I didn't know how to reconcile this kind of thing. I got stuck in a meditation, Robert. I was in the bathroom. I got stuck, and I was in the sun. I mean, I don't know how to explain this. You get it. I was there. And it was very powerful. And there were other things that happened, but I wasn't quite ready for it. And so this was many years ago, and there were multiple experiences. But my life has been, okay, how do I begin to approach that now? Walk into it. Don't leap into it. Walk gently into that place. And yet, it never goes away.
There's so much to comment on here.
Go ahead. I'm talking for a while. I will let you comment now. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, this business about coming out of one belief system. I think one of the most difficult things that we all confront as human beings is that we grow up thinking about the world in a particular way. We grow up thinking this and that is true. We grow up thinking our parents are, you know, the only way to be a parent, or they're pretty perfect. And it's very difficult when we have to confront letting go of our belief system, letting go of our naive thoughts about things. And I compliment you for coming to terms with and seeing the conflict that was happening between the belief system with which you grew up or came of age and coming into your own. So that's first thing. The second thing is that I think that as we come away from our belief system and as we come away from our simple views of things, holding on to our simple views of things and of life. Well, there's that friendly dog again.
It's okay.
As we come away from our simple views of things, really what we're learning to do is to let go of the conceptions of the way the world is, and really learn to engage the world out of a sense of non-repudiation or out of a sense of love. In other words, to be really open to things and open to the world. I think your experience of being one with the sun is a moment in which you are having the experience of real love without anything standing in the way. And I think that is really, when you kind of get down to the nub of it, and here, you know, this is what I'm saying, at 64, when I'm 74, I'll say something else. But when you get down to the nub of it, I think the challenge is that we learn to love without resistance, and we learn to be in the world without anything standing in the way. So our belief systems can stand in the way, our emotional stuff can stand in the way, our sort of expectations about what the other person's going to be or what those people over there are going to be can stand in the way. And I think the challenge is, can we learn to be really open to the world And can we learn to be in the world without running away, in the world without resisting? And that's certainly what I'm after. And I think that's kind of what I'm hearing you point to.
It seems we resist unconditional love, Robert. I know that within the belief system that I was raised, there really isn't this concept of unconditional love unless you meet, well, you get it if you meet certain conditions, which of course is not unconditional. So, and that was part of
it. That's good. That's good. It's unconditional love, but you have to do 10 things to get it.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, and you're right, you know, it wasn't just some physical thing where, oh, there's the sun. It was overwhelming love and acceptance. And yet at the same time, you're still this person, you know, there was fear. I mean, fear did enter into my experience at some point because I brought my baggage with me. That's where the vision quest thing comes up. And, you know, we're never going to touch on all of this in one conversation. I hope that over time we can explore some of this because I'm really trying to help those people out there or reach out to them, those who have had this experience, because I think that we're mystified by our mysticism, essentially, many of us.
Absolutely.
And
not only mystified, but scared. There's a passage in the book where I talk about, I sort of went through another breakthrough. I was probably, it was probably 25 years after the first one. And I had really become more open to the world. And I was at the Denver airport. You come from Denver. I was at that wonderful Denver airport. And I was watching people as they walked down the way, and I realized I was so open to them, I was becoming afraid. It was just, I didn't know how to be that way with people. I think there's a great deal of learning of how do you be strong enough in yourself, how do you be that open to the world, and so that I think if people are afraid, you know, of their mysticism, it's for good reason. It does take learning. It does take...
Yes.
It does take the sort of practice of being that way, or it takes the strengthening of an ego such that you are not afraid anymore. I think there's a lot of learning in this stuff. And that's sort of the point of the book. I think you were pointing to that, but it's like, it's one thing to experience silence. It's another thing to learn how to live it and to be strong enough to be able to live it without resistance. I think that's really the challenge. Can we be that strong in ourselves that nothing makes us afraid, and we don't have to kind of pull ourselves away from anything? That's a lifelong process.
Yeah, and I guess I can't lose sight of the beauty, I guess, of embracing that. You know, not necessarily, and you know, I'm the first. I have to admit, I talk about heaven on earth, and you know, using the terminology from my youth. Although, you know, I will say, like the new age and things like that, that I feel that we're getting into a place, you know, this is my hope that, and maybe it's because of my own way of viewing some of the things that happened to me. Maybe I feel that it's becoming more accessible to us. You know, is it possible that we really can evolve as a species such that transcendent experience, I guess would be another way to put it, becomes more accessible, even if we're not really ready? You know, for me, I wasn't necessarily ready. I hadn't gone to a TM retreat. I mean, there was none of that. And it seems to be happening to people. And maybe it always has happened. I mean, that would be a good question. Perhaps it always has happened to people. And it's just something that we don't talk about. And yet there's a beauty there in that vastness, Robert. It goes beyond, you know, not, you know, living our life more fully or at peace while still having it. There's that beauty. I don't know how to touch it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a couple of interesting questions. The first is, you know, if this is more common than it used to be, I used to say I think it's more common because there's simply more people practicing meditation now. There's just more of us, you know. TM alone was taught to more than 5 million people. That's a lot, and many, many, many more than have learned any form of meditation in the course of history. And then you add to it the huge numbers of people that have practiced Buddhism and practiced, you know, Sufi dance and practiced different forms of Hindu meditation. So it's, they're more of us, but I think something else is going on as well. It's not only that, because somebody like you were not a regular meditator. You hadn't been practicing a lot. And so this kind of thing happens to you, and I hear these kinds of stories a lot. My sense of it is I think there is something happening in the species as a whole. I think we are slowly and inefficiently raising each other up so that there are more people that are able to sort of open themselves up in this way. There's a fellow named David Loy who has done research on this, and his research says more than half of America has had some mystical experience. I mean, when you say, you know, have you had an experience of opening? Have you had a... And more than half of people say, yeah, which is, like, astonishing to me that the numbers are that big. I think there's something going on here. It's hard not to say, boy, there's something really interesting happening. It's hard not to think there's something really new going on here. I don't know how you can avoid that thought when you start looking at this data.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that would be an interesting area of study, I would think, for academics within your discipline, because if something like that really is going on in the human race, you know, so often spirituality is dismissed within academia. And I would imagine, well, if you're in comparative religions, well, maybe not as much, but then again, it could be, it could become more of something to observe, you know, as opposed to something to experience. And I could see
There's a group in England called the Alistair Hardy Society, and these are all people, and it's a growing group in England. These are all people that have had interesting mystical experiences, have been open to something or other. They tend to be kind of Christian-oriented, but nevertheless, these are mystical experiences. And I think this stuff is happening around the world in a way that we just don't know. Spirituality, by the way, is a very common subject in my world, in my field of the comparative study of religion. So, but in most worlds, in most fields, it is not something that gets talked about. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, I just think so often it's marginalized by a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, by people in academia, they don't. It's almost as if they're afraid of it because there's a magic in it that would essentially burst open the boxes that they choose to live in and study. And, you know, to me, discovery is always about paradigm shifts. And I have to believe that there will come a time when it's not marginalized, where it's not looked down upon even. Because
Here you just happened to hit one of my favorite hobby horses. But let me ride my hobby horse for 2 minutes.
Yes, dude.
I often feel, you know, like the life that I've lived, it's such a peculiar life. You know, I live my life around silence. I live my life basically oriented towards, can I keep growing here and can I discover here what it is? And I've often felt, my dad was a businessman. My mother was the daughter of a businessman. And it's like in my father's world, you know, he had no way to make sense of what I was. He had no way to make sense of me. And there's lots of people in this world that, you know, they're so oriented towards making money and doing things on the outside that we are kind of marginalized. We in the spiritual world are kind of marginalized. But I think that the marginalization that I have confronted in my life, and it's been quite real and very difficult, though it's not hard anymore, but the marginalization that I've confronted in my life is because people are afraid of the sides of themselves that they have not yet seen. And because we are all afraid of the sides of ourselves that are a little scary, we repudiate them. And we repudiate people that say, and this is what I say, we repudiate people that say, you know, there is something else, and you can be freer, and you can be more open. In effect, what we do, we spiritual types, we that are oriented towards growth and discovery the way we are, in effect, what we do is we say another way to be a human being is possible. And that's kind of scary to people. So people say, oh, no, that's just silly. So that the marginalization that we face is precisely connected to what you were saying academics feel. I think we all feel, well, all of us in the sense of, you know, in our society, we all feel a little scared of the stuff that we don't yet know. We all feel a little scared of the sides of our life that are silent and the sides of our life that are really open and the sides of our life that are less defended. And I think that that's why it's scary to folks. That's why we can tend to get marginalized, because we stand for something that is both important and a little scary to people. And that's why they run from it. I think.
Yeah, but, no, and I agree with you. I think it can be very frightening, especially to someone who's very focused on, I guess, I would call it materialism, but not in the sense of making money, but the material world.
Mm-hmm.
They think of the material world, the real world, with a small r, in a certain way. And the other thing I've heard expressed, and I've heard this more than once, a bad habit of mine, I don't do it anymore because it takes up too much time, is I used to engage with people on discussion forums and get into debates. So I'd get into debates in an apologetics forum, or I'd get into a debate with atheists. I once wandered into the Richard Dawkins chat room. And they didn't even throw me out. I don't think I got thrown out. You can get thrown out of there. But the thing that I see coming from that quadrant, particularly atheists, or often they're really agnostic or atheistic with respect to a certain type of God. But anyway, the thing that I see is they always say, well, then why hasn't it happened to me? That comes up over and over and over again, that if you're experiencing God, then how come I'm not?
And yeah, right.
I see that a lot. And, you know, at least for me to truly experience it, I had to be open. In fact, I have advised atheists and agnostics, have the courage to just be open. Just say to, without even knowing it's there, go ahead and say, if you're there, I'm open to you. And yet they're even afraid to do that. And what is it that makes people afraid? Because there's no risk in that if you don't believe in it. Although I guess if you really don't believe in it, I don't know if you could be open to it. But I think deep down they know there's something, but it really is frightening. It's unpredictable. It's not the real with a small r. It's not what we think we know.
I think, you know, we're in deep waters here. I think that people are afraid of the experience of the open, of the infinite. People are afraid of silence because there's a side of themselves that they're afraid to welcome or invite in. So that as you open up towards the infinite, you're really opening up towards the unspoken feelings that you have, towards the history that you are unable, you can't allow yourself to think yet. There's stuff in all of us that we don't want to confront. And I think the confrontation with the divine is inviting that stuff in. And I think all of us are a little afraid of that. And so when I see somebody that is so afraid of the divine or so, you know, so adamantly atheistic, I think, you know, we're really working to cover up something or to keep something from having to be confronted. And all I can think is that all human beings, we're all afraid of some aspects of our lives and some things about ourselves we don't particularly want to see or think or feel. And so it's not just those people out there. I want to say I recognize there's stuff like this in me still. And I've been doing this for a very long time, and all of us have things about our lives that are a little scary still. And so the confrontation with the infinite is really the confrontation with the sides of ourselves that we are not yet comfortable with, not yet open to. And so I have nothing but compassion towards people that are still afraid, and nothing but compassion for all of us, because we're all on this path of sort of discovering and finding out what we're about and letting go and really learning how to love. Learning how to love is a huge, huge challenge for us all. And that's kind of the path that I see us doing here.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, and this is, I will confront one of my own weaknesses, is that I get frustrated sometimes. You know, I'm talking, and it isn't that I don't have compassion. Actually, it's that I do have compassion for these people. I so want them to see. I've had people in my life that were very close to me even that couldn't see it. And I tried to explain it, and I didn't know how. And so there is a sense of compassion, but I think part of it is, we have to accept that people are where they are for a reason, and we can't necessarily place ourselves. Something you said, very important, is we can't place ourselves in this place of judgment over where they are, and we ourselves need to come to terms with how we're still opening up. It's so true. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm the same way. You know, I was taught that God was external and a judge. And, you know, that's really hard to open up to the divine when you think that. And yet, you're right. And I'm still learning a lot. And I think I see more and more that a lot of this is all about, you know, I have to say, loving and accepting yourself. You know, just seeing that, okay, yes, I am this person, or I do this thing that, you know, like you say, there's always something. But it doesn't have to be like confessing to God. It's about knowing and loving yourself and at times saying, okay, you know, what do you think? Okay, I know we're running towards the end here, and what we're doing, we're coming to the end of the live broadcast, and I don't want this to go over too much because I know you have limited time, but we don't get cut off immediately. I just want to let you know that.
Okay.
If people are listening and we happen to go over by a minute or two, you can hear this call. It's a teleconference, too, by calling 310-807-5104. So if anyone's listening and we happen to go over a minute or two, you'll still be able to hear this live or in the archive in a few minutes. But the thing I wanted to ask you, and then we will wrap up this particular conversation, is, you know, how can we – I mean, what about this notion – of loving ourselves? Isn't that really what it's about? And how about getting assistance? Do you feel that you've been assisted from this silence with shifting those things that you don't particularly like? You may do it again and again. We all do. We do those things. But I've tended to see a progress, and yet there's this love, this unconditional love. So if you could reflect on that one, and then we'll just probably have to wrap up here. So,
Loving ourselves is, that's a kind of, I know a lot of people put it that way. I'd like to change that phrase just slightly.
Okay.
And that is, you know, it's loving myself is part of the process of being able to love at all. So being able to love my wife, being able to love my friends, being able to love people that I don't know, being able to love that dog across the street that's so upset. In other words, can I be in the world without resisting? And part of that is, can I be with the sides of myself without resisting that I don't like? You know, there's a side of me that has been very anxious in the course of my life, and fortunately that's less so now, but can I be with that side of myself? Can I be with the side of myself that gets selfish sometimes? I think all of this is part of the same process of, can I really be in the world without holding back, without resisting, without putting anything between me and what I'm looking at or what I'm thinking about or what I'm feeling? I think that that's a huge challenge. You said, was there anything or anyone that helped me do that? I think. And I would say, yeah, but it's interesting. It happens so much and at so many different levels. One of my greatest teachers right now is my 17-month-old grandson. And being with him and without, I can be with this kid, and I just love the living daylights out of this kid.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he gets grumpy and he gets fussy, and it's like, I really don't care. It's just, I just love the piss out of him. And it's, in a certain way, that's been a huge learning for me. And it's, and I can tell, you know, it's like almost every year I've got a different teacher, and sometimes it's a teacher, and sometimes it's a student, and sometimes it's, my wife has been a huge teacher for, you know, so yeah, I think all of us have so many resources and so many different teachers, and so much of our life is just, you know, there's so much in our life that's saying, come on, you know, it's like, come on, let go, you know, you can do it here too.
Right, it's like, it's like gently encouraging a child. Now, I did want to interject as the live broadcast is coming to an end, and then I'll say my thank yous and everything after it's over, is that I want to tell people where they can find you. In fact, why don't you tell them really quick where your website is for people.
Okay, the book is called Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up To Be, and the website is called Enlightenment Ain't. You can't put an apostrophe on a URL, so it's Enlightenment Ain't with no apostrophe. So it's enlightenmentain't.com. And the book is available through Amazon, and no doubt your local bookstore can get a copy. And if you want to drop me a note from the website, my email address is there, and I'd love to hear from you. And so again, enlightenmentaint.com, and Enlightenment 8, when it's cracked up to be, is the name of the book. Thank you for letting me do that.
Yes, yes. Well, I'd like to thank you, Robert, for being here with us again. This entire gathering, which I feel it's becoming, this gathering of souls that is this show, which isn't, I don't even like to call it a show, whatever it is that we're creating here, I feel that, you know, we're just all coming together trying to understand each other and understand ourselves. And, you know, part something that came through of your book, I know that you had that goal within some of your work that you've been trying to create places for dialogue and understanding. And, you know, I so connected to that, because that's my hope for what this is, whatever this is that's being created here, is that it's a place where we can just come together as ourselves, just like that hymn I learned long ago in a different context, just as I am. And that's what I appreciate about you, Robert. You know, you have these wonderful gifts and such a fascinating journey, and of course all the academic experience as well, and the leadership, and you bring all of that, and yet when you're here, you're simply you, and that's the whole point. That's the point of this show. And thank you. Let me say from my heart, you know, I want to say, I would say namaste, but it doesn't quite cover it. It's
well,
more
let me
than
also
that.
Say, let me say to you, Susan, that I know how hard it is to develop a program the way you've done, to try to bring a community together the way you've done. It is very difficult to try to be open and honest and thoughtful in public the way you are. And my hat is off to you for doing as well as you do, for keeping at it. I know how emotionally draining it can be and how challenging it can be to make something like this happen and happen on a routine basis. And I think you're doing a wonderful job. And we need more of this in our world. We need more people who are willing to be thoughtful and open and vulnerable together. And so you're doing good work, and I want to tell you thank you as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. And, you know, often when we're in the midst of something like this, we don't even exactly know what it is that we're creating. And I do feel that there's a we here. You know, we don't know. It's almost like we're tricked into it. We trick ourselves into it. It just sort of happened. I mean, to be honest, it just happened. And, you know, it is my hope that, you know, more and more we will find ways, not just this way, but multiple ways to come together and be ourselves and be honest. It's just so often we're hiding what we really think. And it's so important, if we're going to have conversations in the world, to really be ourselves. I'm really beginning to see that. And yet I know that it's been a journey for me too, to figure out how to do this. And I'm still figuring it out. And, you know, I guess it just is in the process of creating itself. Let's just put it that way. But thank you so much. And I so appreciated you being here today.
And I look forward to doing it again. This is just great fun. And so let's do it again.
Oh, that would be wonderful. So thank you again. And enjoy the rest of your journey today. So, all right.
Bye-bye.
Well, take care. All right, just a note, a show note regarding what's coming up. Next week on Wednesday, let's see, losing track of my days. Yes, Wednesday, October 3rd, Kevin Miller is going to be here. He is the writer and director of a new motion picture called Hellbound? And what he has done is created a documentary where people from all different perspectives, from conservative to more liberal Christianity, reflect upon hell and what they believe about hell very openly and honestly. So I'm really looking forward to that discussion as well next week. And I hope you can join us because I think it's going to be a very honest time to talk about what really is a topic that has been important to a lot of people, anyone who's come from that path. And it does have an influence on our society as well. So I do think that that'll be quite an interesting show. The other thing I wanted to note is I will be at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo October 5th through 7th. I will have a booth there, booth number 704, if you want to come by and say hello. I'm also going to be speaking on Sunday, October 7th at 4 p.m. at the Expo. I'm going to be speaking on something I haven't talked about too much on this show, which is the Prophetess Legacy, which is my ongoing project researching mystical women and prophetesses. And even though I don't come from academia like Dr. Foreman does, as an amateur researcher, I am researching these women because the visionary experience fascinated me through my own experience, and it caused me to become curious about visionary experiences in general, and particularly an area that I felt called to focus upon were the women through the ages, through different forms of religion and spirituality, what they have experienced. So just letting you know about that. If you want to learn more about all of this, as well as this program, please visit frontierbeyondfear.com. And there's also a way, should you feel so led, to support the show there, the ongoing maintenance costs and so forth. So if you feel that you are led to do that, that's where you can find the links to do so. So thank you again for being here today. I really appreciate those that are coming together to just be authentically themselves and listen to these very authentic and honest conversations. And I do feel that we are all creating this together. I can feel the energy of everyone participating in this, and I just want to thank all of you for being here. So whether you're listening to this show day or night, I hope you enjoy the rest of your journey, and I hope to see you here again. Thank you so much.